Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is episode 113 of Nintendo World Report's connectivity podcast, Never Got Wet. We've got two segments for you on the show. First up is an old school newscast with Neil, Scott, and Zach, and after that they fade into a little bit of what we've been playing, and then we've got a bonus segment on dinosaurs at the end of the show. Enjoy the episode.
Everyone, and welcome to the Gamers Without Jobs podcast, or connectivity. On this segment, we're going to be talking about games we've been playing, and we're also going to talk a little bit of news. We're recording this Thursday night, so the day when all the MPD stuff came out, and we found out aren't so hot for the Wii U, and well, the 3DS is doing okay.
The 3DS is doing perfectly fine. 3DS sold 770,000 units over the month of November. It was an increase by 100% over the month prior. Wow. And now lifetime, it's 10.5 million units. And this is all just in North America.
But it's streak atop the console charts, or hardware charts, I guess, came to an end, obviously.
The PS4 and the Xbox One, the Xbox One was on the market for 8 days. The PS4 was on the market for 15. Mm-hmm. They sold, I forget the exact numbers because I'm focusing on Nintendo news here, but they were both north of 900,000 in 8 and 15 days each.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, they had announced that. Both of them had announced those numbers themselves even way before NPD.
Yeah, I think Microsoft announced their shit yesterday. Microsoft pushed 2 million units across the paltry amount of territories that they launched in, and I think Sony's over 2 million units as well.
Yeah,
and that's,
well, Sony,
that's,
the
I
PlayStation
believe,
4 release
through. I think that's what it is. I know for Microsoft, because I think they got crap because I think they said there was 1 million units in retailers on launch day. So Major Nelson made the little douchebag point to just be like, and these were all sold to consumers.
Yeah,
but for comparison, the Wii U in its first month, crap. I wish I had this in front of me because I looked it up when the Microsoft news came out. But basically, both the Xbox One and the PS4 are on pace to top Wii U in its first month and a half. which, I mean, I guess at this point isn't that big of a surprise, but just in case you guys are out there thinking that, like, oh, well, the Wii U did good at launch. It's like, yeah, the Wii U didn't do bad at launch, but the PS4 and the Xbox One are doing way better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
well, this is good, apparently.
Launch was not a problem for Wii U. It wasn't amazing, but it wasn't bad. It was, I think, a notch above the PS3, not as high as a 360 or Wii. But now we're kind of in, like, DEF CON. I don't know. It goes down, right? DEF CON 1 would be terrible, or is it, like, DEF CON 3 is terrible? I'm not even sure.
3 is terrible. The higher you go,
bad.
The worse it gets.
Okay, we're on, like, DEF CON 11. Maybe DEF CON 9 million to go with the amount of Wii U's that they think they're going to sell from April 1st, 2013 to March 31st, 2014.
Oh, my gosh. Like
so over that year period, right now we are in month 8 of 12 in that year period, and as far as I know, and a lot of this is kind of unconfirmed numbers, they might be at 1 million units.
Oh!
At 8 months.
So
because
bad.
We knew that the first 6 months, this is confirmed, they were at a little under 500,000. We know that in North America, I believe they sold 230,000 around there. I've heard a couple different reports.
Oh, when you said 232, I thought you meant total.
No, 230,000 was the month for November 2013, this past month. And I think October was something like 80 or 100, maybe. It wasn't like, I mean, it wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible. It was an improvement over, maybe it was more than that. I'm not sure of that exact number, but regardless, they're probably a little over 1 million worldwide for this fiscal year, which would put them at about 4.5-5 million worldwide, something like
that. So how long does this have to go on before somebody fires Iwata? My question.
I think the end of the fiscal year. I think they bought enough time that the end of March 31st, 2014 could be the beginning of some shit going down at Nintendo. Mm. I would say that this is... I haven't, mainly because this happened on my way home, and then I ate dinner and didn't really do a lot of mindless research that I've done recently. when it comes to all these numbers. But I know that the Dreamcast, at this point in its life, was already at 10 million units. Or I think, I don't know. Basically, the Dreamcast was doing way better. Well, so the Dreamcast was discontinued. I guess in the Wii U's life cycle, it would have been discontinued in March, January, or something like that. Like the upcoming January or March. And at the end, its total sales, I think, was 10 million.
Now you got to look up the Saturn.
Yeah, okay. I actually did, because someone brought that up. The Saturn was at 9.5 million for its entire life. The Saturn did very, very bad.
Yes, it did.
But I think,
it's the virtual boy of Sega consoles.
I mean, I made the comment, the somewhat bold comment on Twitter talking about all this, saying that this is, you know, there's no comparison for this. And then people threw out, oh, the Virtual Boy sold 770,000 in its entire lifetime. And I think there's some argument to be made that the Virtual Boy isn't really a serious home console.
No.
It was like a hybrid, portable, weird thing. Someone also tossed out the 3DO. I would also argue that, I'm sorry, Panasonic making a fucking video game system isn't a legitimate home console. But, I mean, I think the Saturn comparison's apt. And we all know how that eventually ended. Fortunately, Nintendo has a lot more financial reserves, but I think that there's probably going to be a lot less patience.
Well, yeah, and Nintendo has a second very pretty successful device right now. You know, so it's not like they're completely tied into one thing. So there's that. But yeah, it is kind of startling, and it does make you wonder if there's just going to be a console reboot sooner than. You know, then this past generation we just came from, where every console lasted, what was it, seven, eight years?
Well, the Wii was the shortest one, and that was six.
Okay.
The Xbox was eight, and the PS3 was, or no, the Xbox was nine, the PS3 was eight.
Okay.
And I would argue the PS3 is still alive and kicking. The 360 is mostly, well, I guess the 360 has some third-party stuff, and I think the Fable port of the, like, Anniversary Collection, I think that's a 360 game.
You know, what's really sad about all this is that, I mean, you and me and Scott and all of us have talked, and the RFN guys, we all know how to solve the problem, or, you know, supposedly.
Well, do we?
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
Enlighten me.
No, I'm saying we've all thrown out really good ideas, like don't name it the Wii U, or, you know, to let people know it's a different system, or, you know, all sorts of things that should have been done at the beginning. And I have to think that the people at Nintendo are smart people, right? They're smart people.
Yeah.
Why didn't they think of these things?
I don't know. Maybe communication from the smart people lower down isn't getting to the people at top who are making the decisions. I don't know.
I think you're on the right track, Scott. From the scuttlebutt that I've heard, people that I know and stuff like that. This comes from NCL, the owners, the parent company of Nintendo of America. Everyone's quick to blame Reggie, and
I blame Reggie's completely.
Executing a marketing strategy that I think he was dealt a bunch of cards, and he's like, well, these cards are kind of shitty, but I gotta sell it.
Yeah.
And that's why you'll see him do stuff like Metacritic fucking loved 3D World, because he's not going to go there and be like, it sold great, because it didn't.
Right.
But if you notice that he did in the VGX thing, and this kind of foretold me that Wii U wasn't looking too great, when they were talking about Super Mario 3D World at the everyone hated it, the VGX, Spike TV, video game, whatever the hell it is. But Reggie was on showing off Cranky Kong. Yeah. But he did make the comment that Super Mario 3D World met their expectations. I don't know why this 9 million number was thrown about. Maybe it was just a lofty goal to kind of hope for. Yeah. But I don't think any of this information that we're getting as far as sales is really that surprising. But, I mean, when you look at, I think, as dumb as, like, the pitch commercials are for Wii U, I think that's some of the best marketing that they've attempted to do in a very long time.
Well, I think so.
It's marketing, period. First time I've seen Wii U commercials.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had ones last year, but it was just like that weird cube thing when they're like, check it out, you can play off the TV, and there's fucking Mario and shit, and you can play on this gamepad thing.
Right, with all the rooms. Yeah, it looks like the the title sequence from the Brady Bunch, basically. Yeah.
And then they didn't really have any commercials for a while because they didn't really have anything to pimp. So
yep.
You're going to be like, hey, guys, get all these game that's coming out on the system this month.
Yeah, I actually think these new commercials are fairly effective. I mean, it says to me everything you need to say in 30 seconds that, you know, it's not just the Wii. It's an upgrade, HD. It's got these games, and, I mean, basically that's it. They get in and out, and they say what they need to say.
And I mean, I get what Nintendo was doing with when they released 3D World and Zelda on November 22nd. And if you looked even, people might not be paying attention to this as much, but I sure as shit do because it's relevant to what I'm doing here. The review embargoes for Zelda and Super Mario 3D World were pretty much in line with when the PS4 embargoes went up and when the Xbox One embargoes went up.
Oh,
yeah, that was very much deliberate, or at least, you know, an educated guess as to when those embargoes were going to wind up. And I think they made this gamble and kind of counter-programming to an extent, and I think it fucking failed, at least for the Wii U. I think the 3DS is doing fine. They said that, Zelda, including the special edition Zelda 3DS XL units, they hit over 400,000 for Zelda in, 10 days. Which,
wow.
Okay, is that like, you know, blazing up the charts and everything? But it's totally fine. Not hurting anything. That's they sold a bunch of those Zelda 3DS XLs. And I think that's part of the problem, too, is that, I mean, with there's just not a lot of games on Wii U. There's not. No. And I know there are really good games on Wii U, but there's just not a lot there.
Like the GameCube and the N64.
Yeah. Except for those, I don't know. Those were dire times, but at least they sold.
But you see, like, but the PS4 and the Xbox One, I mean, pretty much have nothing. I mean, have probably worse launch lineups than the Wii U. But
suckers like you, Scott, where you bought one at launch and then you played 3D World for 3 weeks.
Yep, it's true. Yeah, I've played more time in just 3D World than I have doing the totality of stuff I've done on the PS4 easily. I mean, probably twice the amount of time in 3D World than anything I've done on PS4.
Yeah.
Damn.
But that shows you the brand and name strength of Sony and Microsoft right now compared to Nintendo and where Nintendo used to be. I mean, like we're saying, like you had the Nintendo 64 come out, and sure you had like this Hallmark game launch immediately, which is great. But I mean, the N64 had such a strong launch, and probably a strong couple of years after that because that name still really meant something. But it has steadily gone down, and it's to the point now where they just can't rely on name alone.
Well, did you read Emily Rogers' article about how Nintendo's been relying on Mario too much?
I don't think I read all of it. I think I skimmed most of it. Maybe that's I read good. All of it. I don't know. I don't think adding in fucking 1080 snowboarding is going to save the day.
Her point was during the GameCube years, Iwata said, well, we've reached a point where you can't just rely on one series, one franchise, one game to sell a console. And now he's been quoted as saying, we're just looking for that one game. We know that this one game can turn things around.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think that is a very short-sighted way of thinking. But I don't think the over-reliance on Mario is a problem because, I mean, look at the money. Follow the money. Mario games, okay, 3D World's not doing too hot, but pretty much every other Mario game sells very well.
Well, maybe we've reached kind of a saturation point with Mario.
I wouldn't be surprised. 3D World is, what, like the sixth Mario game in 7 years or something?
Yeah.
At least, like, you know, kind of like mainline.
Right.
What's unfortunate is that this wasn't a launch game.
I don't think it could have been.
Maybe not. I mean, I'm not saying it was ready or anything, but just imagine if 3D World was the Mario game we got the Wii U launch. I mean, that it would be much different than, well, you got a 2D Mario game.
Imagine if
3D
World didn't come out in the middle of two huge, massive console launches.
Right, yeah. And maybe that's right there is another sign of Nintendo sort of maybe overestimating their own brand and Mario as a brand as well.
I mean, and I'll even, I was talking about this, I think staffer Alex Kulafi on Twitter made a good point when, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily been super, no, I guess he has been kind of down on Link Between Worlds and 3D World. And I enjoyed both of those games. I fucking love Link Between Worlds. I think it's fantastic.
Man, it's good.
But a lot of Nintendo games lately have been kind of, I don't know, stagnant. I mean, Pikmin 3, a fantastic game, doesn't really offer anything new other than a refinement on the Pikmin formula. New Super Mario Brothers U, even 3D World. It's really creative and stuff, but it's just fucking 3D land with New Super Mario Brothers Wii multiplayer.
Right.
And, like, it's, I mean, it's a great game, but, like, it's nothing new, and that's what a lot of their franchises have gone. Like, I'm looking at a game like Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and, I mean, I'm excited for it. I'll play it, but, I mean, it's, I keep on looking at it, and I'm like, okay, Frankie Kong looks like he's, like, Scrooge McDuck. It's pretty cool.
Only in multiplayer.
Well, no. It's, like, you know how in Donkey Kong Country Returns, like, Diddy would jump on your back?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Oh.
And you can switch between the Kongs and levels.
All right.
But it is like, you know, that game's going to be fun and I'll get it, but I can't say I'm like chomping at the bit because it's something that there's nothing really that innovative about it. There's nothing that interesting. It's just another Donkey Kong Country game, which is cool, but I don't think people are going to buy the system for that.
I don't think
the people who own the system are going to drop everything to go buy that game.
You know, I was thinking the other day about this, and I kind of thinking to myself that it's unfortunate that Nintendo hasn't tried to cash in really on two super popular genres as they were popular. I think of like the PlayStation, the N64, and how Final Fantasy VII blew up, and how like PlayStation became the home of all these crazy JRPGs that I think really defined that generation.
Oh yeah.
And Nintendo didn't have any of that. And I mean, I just think like, what if they had tried to make a first party
Scott, playing
game.
You're forgetting Quest 64.
No, I'm not forgetting it. Well, I am forgetting it, but by choice.
I was actually talking about Quest 64 with someone at work a couple weeks ago, and holy shit, that game was terrible. But like, who else was in that situation as I was, where I didn't really know any better, and I just really wanted an RPG, so I played the shit out of Quest 64.
Yep, me too. I didn't have a PlayStation yet.
It was only like years later, like after my brother got a PlayStation, and then I would either like rent or buy RPGs really cheaply, and then I was playing them. I'm like, "What the hell is wrong with me?"
Yep.
It was just I didn't know any better, and I was hungry.
I was thinking too how in this past generation they kind of missed the boat on first-person shooters. I mean, with the popularity of like Call of Duty and Halo, and I mean, like Microsoft and Sony each have their successful first-person shooter franchise, and Nintendo doesn't have that.
That's like 7 years.
Right, and it's more adventure than, you know, it's not, I wouldn't call it a shooter by any means.
It's not an
online
multiplayer shooter.
I think the new
GoldenEye
was about as shooty-shooty as it got.
That was a pretty good game. Maybe
that was an attempt. I'm not sure, but of course then it released on the Wii, so it just didn't, graphically, so that doesn't really
I think that GoldenEye
that,
game
that
did
crowd
really
in.
Well, though.
It's a really good game.
Yeah.
It didn't do bad. It is good. I actually really like that game. Yeah. It had online multiplayer.
I think
it was
the best first-person shooter on Wii. I don't really count Metroid Prime 3 as a first-person shooter, which I guess answers your me bringing it up and then you rejecting it. I agree with you because I didn't count it as a first-person shooter.
So it's just like you've got these two, I think, the two genres that define two different generations, and Nintendo didn't really capitalize on either of them. I think that's... Yeah. I mean, people want these experiences, so they go other places to get them. I mean, sure, you can come back and you can play Mario and Donkey Kong and everything, but I think of like the Nintendo and Super Nintendo days, and I mean, the franchises that we love are also different between Mario and Zelda and Metroid and these things, and it was because Nintendo was sort of like dipping into all these different genres and styles and was doing a lot of different things, and now as we've expanded and we have new genres and subgenres, Nintendo hasn't really... I mean, Pikmin to me is probably the last real, like, let's try something new, and they kind of tried to do like a real time strategy game. But there hasn't been much of that.
And it's aces. And I mean, but there's also certain games that Nintendo's the only people that can really do it right. I mean, look at a game like Smash Brothers.
Sure.
Sony tried that and it was fucking terrible.
Yep. I agree.
Well, I guess Zelda Darksiders replicated that shit pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Platformers.
Heck, I'd say Darksiders 1 and 2 are, in terms of world exploration and dungeon design, better than the last few Zeldas.
I'll still fight a dude over Skyward Sword. I really liked Skyward Sword.
I really adored Skyward Sword.
I really like Hyrule Historia.
I mean, that is really cool.
Yeah.
and I appreciate all the art from Skyward Sword.
Yeah, but I've... I wouldn't say I was delusional over the past year that, like, oh, the Wii U will turn around. But there was a part of me that was thinking, I'm like, well, I mean, looking at how the Wii U did, and I guess the PS4 and the Xbox One probably won't do as well. And, you know, hopefully the Wii U will have an upturn when more games come out. That didn't happen at all.
Nope.
Pretty much everything.
I wonder if instead of focusing on developing Super Mario 3D World, what if they had pushed Mario Kart to the center stage of development and it had come out this year or even this holiday? I think that would have sold infinitely better.
You know, actually, honestly, I think it would have sold better than 3D World probably, but I don't know that it would have pushed systems. I think it is better to save that till sort of the, I don't know, all of a sudden kind of hubbub about these new consoles dies down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have this great Wii U game come out that, you know, drives people. Because it could get lost in all that.
Or at least, you know, closer to the Wii's launch. I think Mario Kart Wii sold systems.
Well, kind of what we've established here is anything worthwhile at or
right,
shortly
yeah,
after
sure,
launch would have been great.
I just wonder why they didn't focus on a Mario Kart game.
I mean, I feel like the first great Wii U games came out at launch, and then now the next batch of great Wii U, well, a great Wii U game came out now, and they're just like decent,
I mean,
to like pretty good stuff in between,
and
not much of it.
You know what's really depressing? Remember, I think it was like last year, and you started hearing all these indie developers being like, oh, they got their Wii U development access. We're going to have, you know, we had those five awesome, fantastic indie games. Well, okay, Chasing Aurora was pretty shitty. We had four great Wii U indie games on the eShop day one, and that was awesome. And since then, what is it? Like maybe 10 good games, usually that later
even,
than other.
Even Way Forward just ported Mighty Switch Force 2 to the eShop.
Well, I mean, it was either that or then it doesn't come out for a long time. I mean, there was confusion because the precedent was set that they had the HD version.
Right.
Because I don't know. Oh no, Zach, you weren't at E3 this year.
No.
When we were talking to them at E3, they were basically talking to us about how they were weighing the options between are they going to take more time to do a full HD remake of Mighty Switch Force 2 or just do a straight port? And I think the straight port was what they came to. And honestly, that might have been the best decision because then it got it out
there
sooner.
Yeah, probably cheaper and probably more money.
But, I mean, the indie game scene on Wii U, I guess maybe it could turn around, but it's not looking that great. I mean,
it took the PS3 a long time to get a good indie scene, though.
It's not taking the PS4 that long.
Well,
as long as things actually come out in Q1 that they say they are. I mean, that's why, like, I'm looking at stuff like what's coming to the Vita and what's coming to the PS4, and Sony is kicking the shit out of Nintendo in the indie.
Well, already Rezogun has more buzz about it than I think any Wii U indie game had. I mean, save for maybe Little Inferno, but even that was kind of like a flash in the pan.
I mean, that's the problem, and it's even extending to 3DS eShop as well. I think the last interesting game to come out on 3DS eShop was SteamWorld Dig in August.
That's like a
4-month gap. I think I side more with you, Zach. I thought it was, like, I beat it. I thought it was fun, but I didn't understand all the crazy praise. But even still, like, I don't think there's no, regardless of our personal stance, SteamWorld Dig, pretty sizable quality eShop game.
Sure.
And that was in the beginning of August. I can't think of a game that came out then that was a nice original effort. And even on the Wii U eShop, like, there's some parity with, like, XBLA and PSN, but outside of that, has there really been any really cool Wii U-specific indie games in months?
No.
And, I mean, it just, I don't know if that'll get better, because I assumed that when all these indie developers were getting kits at the end of last year, and then GDC was ramping up, and then talking about how easy it was to bring stuff over, I think that's bullshit.
Even the virtual console is drying up already.
Yeah. Well, that never really got wet, I guess.
That's true.
I think that should be the name for this episode.
Getting wet.
Never got wet.
Yep. But, I mean, it just, like, I went to a GameStop yesterday, and I was looking at the Vita PS4 display, and I'm like, the PS4 unit for some reason wasn't working, trying to hit the little PlayStation button, nothing fucking happened. It's not the first time that's happened to me on a PS4, like, in-store setup. Weird. anyone else has had that happen to them, let me know. I don't know if I'm just insane. Don't know how to press button. But then I picked up the Vita, and I was like, I wonder what's on this thing. And it's like Tearaway and a bunch of indie games. They had Runner 2. They had Guacamelee.
Ooh.
All these really, really good games on demo. And I remember they had fucking Knit. Oh, yeah, Knit Underground's coming out next week on Wii U Shop. That's a pretty fun game. I played it on Vita because it was a PS Plus game, and it was essentially, you know, free with a $50 subscription.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, Sony's highlighting all these indie games, and I don't really see Nintendo doing that much. They do kind of a paltry version of that at stuff like PAX, but who's that? Who is that marketing to? That's marketing to the fucking people who go to PAX. What are the Nintendo Directs? Who do they market to? The fucking people that already care about Nintendo. Yeah, that does generate news stories, but, like, I don't think Nintendo Directs do as well as they think they do.
Yeah.
For me, they're great because I love getting my you know, my Nintendo news directly. And yes, I did the little direct thing right now. But I don't really think it's helping them in the long run.
The status direct is going to be in a couple months when Iwata has to fall on his sword. That's going to be the most depressing.
A fall on a banana.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we've been playing, because this is really depressing.
I want to see the transition from Iwata doing Nintendo Directs to his successor, because that's going to happen in March, right? It's all of a sudden just another dude shows up, and they're like, who the fuck are you? And it just tells you.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's going to have to be a handoff. Like, there's going to have to be, like, they can't just have this guy come in. I mean, Iwata has established himself on these Directs. He's going to have to say, like, goodbye and welcome this other guy. I hope they just do, like, a full-on regeneration, like in Doctor Who.
I mean, I'm kind of getting to be of the mind. I'm not 100% there yet. I would say I'm, like, 85% there that, like, Iwata's fucked, and 2014 will be the last year he spends as Nintendo president, and he won't make it to the end of the year. Whoever they would bring in after him, I think it would be fucking destructive end-of-days insanity, because I think it would involve going to iOS and Android. I think it would involve expanding stuff, and I don't know if I want a Nintendo like that. I think shit would change to be even worse than it is now, at least from a creative standpoint. It might, the company might be more profitable, but I think, honestly, like, this fucking sucks.
The day Super Mario World is put on iOS is the day Nintendo dies.
Well, not really. It's probably the day Nintendo thrives. It's the day the Nintendo in your mind dies,
exactly.
It's probably their saving grace, honestly.
I think the day that happens is the day when I stop doing anything with this site. And I'm just like, fuck it.
The day before that happens is the day I buy some shares in Nintendo. That shit's gonna swell.
Yeah, that's why I'm leaving.
That's a better episode title, Just Gonna Swell.
Yeah, there's a lot to pull from. Mike's got his work cut out for him. But yeah, I don't know, but I agree. I think there's gonna have to be some radical changes. And I know people don't want to see Nintendo release things on other platforms that they don't own, and I understand that. But I mean, at some point, it becomes a conversation between, like, well, what's more important, sort of the legacy, like our brand's legacy, or the future, you know, and making money. And shareholders, I don't think are gonna care as much about legacy.
Yep.
So I think that's the way it's gonna go.
Underdog football team from Portland, the Portland Lumberjacks, playing Madden NFL 13 or no Madden NFL 25. which did not come to Wii U because fuck EA Sports. However, I did buy Madden for like $25 at a Razor off of Amazon. So waited for a sale. No, I'm weak. I realize that I'm full of shit. But I really like playing Madden, man. But you can see you can relocate a team this year, which would have been a great feature to have on Wii U. So I took the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've been doing better lately, but still like dregs of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Simulated an entire year. However, in the new way that they have the franchise mode set up, you have to simulate game by game, which is fucking annoying. So I went on the internet, was checking Twitter, and would hit simulate week, and then turn around like 2 minutes later, simulate the next week. So I made it to the end of the year. Signed every Packer player in free agency that I could. And then in the draft, I took a running back. I believe he was from, I think he was from Nebraska, and his name is Lincoln Holmes. And he ran for like 250 yards when we made it to the Super Bowl. So that was cool. And then I got in the fifth round, which is a steal, was this the speedy quarterback named Rod Gonzalez. He was rookie of the year. So that was cool. And the Portland Lumberjacks, you know, playing against the Indianapolis Colts, Tennessee Titans, and Houston Texans, all teams that are very close by. They, you know, had a good regular season and won the Super Bowl. Number one seed in the AFC. Real wow. Real turnaround.
What was the matchup in the Super Bowl?
The NFC, I don't think it was. I'm trying to remember because this was a couple days ago. Shit, I do not remember. I think it was the Niners. But it was a, you know, a good match. The running back, he ran for like 150 yards in like 2.5 quarters and then got injured and didn't come back for the rest of the game. He like broke his leg. But the best part is that he still was the Super Bowl MVP. So even though he broke his leg, he's like, they have like the animation at the end and like you see the dudes out there accepting the trophy. I'm like, but why aren't you on crutches?
That would have been awesome if they'd gone through the extra effort to actually put him on crutches.
All the faces
kind of
look so
in.
Fucking janky on Madden now. It's really
always
funny.
Always.
It's laughable, and it's even looking at like I have been looking at PS4 videos of Madden, and even that looks like shit.
I was just gonna ask, yeah.
Which I'll be completely honest. Once again, find that quote of me saying that I won't buy Madden. If I get a PS4 soon, I will probably get Madden for PS4 because then I can play it on my Vita.
It's too bad that I don't think it's one of, I don't think, yeah, which is such a good feature. But it's too bad. I don't think that's one of those where you can buy it on PS3 and then upgrade for $10.
Yeah, I looked into it. But I was watching the PS4 videos. I'm like, this doesn't really look any better. It might even be worse.
Yeah. It probably won't even be next year that you see a lot of improvement. It's going to be like when they finally really like revamp the engine ground up for like the new consoles. Next year we'll probably still be on all the old consoles and it'll look a little bit better, but not much, I don't think.
But I mean, Madden delivers what I want. Like, it's the really like terrible load times. Not that that's what I want, but like that's just what happens in that game. But like, I get to play football. Like, AI is not total shit and you can tweak the sliders and stuff. And I get to play as Eddie Lacy and a healthy Aaron Rodgers, so that's cool.
Your dream come true.
Wow, that must be nice.
I know. Live out fantasies where the Packers have a winning record this year so far. Alternate reality where they're like 9-2 and ready to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I've also been playing a lot of Picross lately on the 3DS. As some of you might know, Lauren, my wife, is a Picross fiend. So I wrestled. What happened is I got Picrossy 2 and Picrossy 3. And didn't play them, and she would play them. And I think on all three of those games, something like 20-25 hours on her behalf each game over the past couple months. And she's finished with all of them now, so I took it upon myself. Now that, you know, Zelda's done, I don't really have a lot that I'm playing on 3DS. So I deleted her files, and then I proceeded to beat Picross E1 and E2 to completion. And I think I've got about... I think I'm just have the extra mode in Picross E3 to do, and then I'm done that. Picross is a lot of fun.
I can't get behind a Picross game anymore since Picross 3D. It's really hard to go to a normal Picross game.
I have been thinking about how I should just play Picross 3D again.
I recently picked it back up. I'm not going to lie. I've been doing random puzzles. I think I'm an addict.
It's so good.
Might be the best game on 2DS, on normal DS.
I think Picross 3D is just like the best game ever. Like, yeah, I'll be ballsy. I said it. Kind of thing. What else have I been playing? Ninja Gaiden 3 on a 3DS Virtual Console.
I'm sorry.
No, actually, there's a reason why I wanted to bring this one up. I've been playing other shit too, but this is the last one that I'll focus on. Ninja Gaiden 3 actually isn't that bad of a game. I always thought that it was kind of this redheaded stepchild, and like, it's not as good as 1 and 2, but it's still a really good game. I don't really think there's any denying that.
All right.
Story's really dumb. Like, super dumb. Like, you're fighting Bionoids, which are just like these weird, like, you know, organic robot creature sort of things. And, like, you kill the girl in the beginning, but you don't because there's a clone of you. Somehow this fits in between 1 and 2. There's an ancient ship of doom. That's the subtitle of the game. And it really, it has this odd sci-fi vibe after, like, two games of, like, Cthulhu nonsense. But it's still, I mean, it still plays as tight as the other ones. It's got some new additions. Like, you can upgrade your sword in levels. You can get different power-ups that, like, increase your sword's range. And you can hang from stuff. So that's cool. Makes me sad that this 2D style of Ninja Gaiden is no more. And we won't see it again. If anyone knows of any good indie games that are like this, let me know. I would totally play it.
Play Hagelman 3.
I never got that far in Retro Game Challenge.
Oh, it's so good. It is a Ninja Gaiden game.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to get through that again. It's just, I think I got stuck on the Rally King stuff, because fuck Rally King.
Oh man, that game blows. And then there's a sequel.
Yeah, that's what I got to the sequel, and I think I put the game down and never touched it again.
I don't blame you.
What have you guys been playing?
Oh, go first, Scott.
Oh, well, thank you. So I've been playing two things pretty much nonstop. The first of which is Super Mario 3D World, which has been talked about a lot on this podcast. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I actually haven't gotten a chance to talk about it at all. And I really adore it. My wife and I played it now to completion. Just last night, finally beat the very last unlockable level. It's so crazy fucking hard. Neil, did you get through all of that?
I'm finding it hard to go back through everything and get green stars and stamps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm at that point where I'm just kind of like, I've played every level that I can, except for, like, I guess, is it just one level that you get for getting everything?
When you get all the green stars and stamps and everything? Yeah. So I guess to everyone who doesn't know, you have to collect every single green star, every single stamp, and you have to hit the top of the flagpole in every level.
So like 3D Land, you get one really hard level.
Yeah, well, you get three really hard levels.
Okay. So it's three levels unlock after you get that?
But it's one of each kind of level. So you've got one really hard toad level, you know, like the ones where you're controlling the toad who can't jump, the explorer toad. You've got one really hard mystery dungeon or mystery house.
Yeah, mystery house.
Where it combines every single mystery house you've already done.
Oh, wow.
And puts them all together.
So it's like
and
a 50 level thing?
Yep. That's
pretty cool.
It's like, I think it's like 30 something by the time you get through it. But yeah, it's everything all slammed together with no power ups. I mean, some that if that 10 second room is dependent on a power up, they give it to you, but there's no like breaks in between or like, or anything like that. You just have to do it all. And then one final like badass, just super hard level.
Sort of like the last crazy one in 3D Land.
Yeah, exactly. That pretty much combines like everything you've done, and it was super, super hard.
I mean, the way I look at it is that I'll probably go back into that game like I did 3D Land, where 3D Land, I, you know, beat every level that I could, and then I just got to a point where, well, I think I might have gotten almost all of the coins in that one, but then I had to beat everything again as Luigi, and I didn't really feel like doing that. Eventually, I did. It was actually when I was visiting Zach, so the August after it came out, I went through and you know, beat the game. Because I guess I was so bored in Alaska, because what the fuck else do you do other than play video games?
I know.
That's pretty much it.
But I have a feeling I'll probably do that with 3D World in May when the Wii U's dead. Go to 3D World and finish it. That's there depressing because it's not a joke entirely.
That'll be how you eulogize it. Yeah.
But I mean, I really love 3D World. Don't get me wrong. It's a really, really fun game. But I've pretty much seen everything that you can see without getting to the last three stages. And every time I play it with friends, we basically get through like two or three levels and then they get frustrated and we stop playing.
Yeah, I haven't played with more than just my wife and I, which two people in any of these games usually to me is like the perfect amount.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've been like completely hooked on it.
It's wildly inconsistent for me as far as like people that enjoy it or not. There's some people that I thought would like it and they fucking hated it. And there's other people that I'm like, oh, they probably won't get into it. And then we have a blast. Like, it's just like, usually when I go to these multiplayer games, I can usually predict out of my friends and family, like who's going to get into this and who won't. With 3D World, it has been so inconsistent that I don't have any kind of statement to make except for that it's wildly inconsistent.
Yep, that's fair. Yeah, it's got to be. And I mean, the fact that it's 3D instead of 2D is obviously going to be a hurdle for maybe some of the casual people you might normally be able to play a Mario game with. Like this, so. But yeah, I really adore it. I'm tempted. Have you guys heard about how you get the final last five stamps?
Isn't that by fucking beating the level and getting to the top of the flagpole with all the characters?
Yeah, is that well? I don't know if you. I don't know if you have to get to the top of the flagpole with every character, but yeah, you have to beat every level with every character.
Oh, screw that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, it's just a stamp. You don't have to do it, but I like that option's there. That it gives you even more like.
It's just a stamp at the end?
Yeah, exactly. You don't need those last five stamps. Fine. Yeah, you don't need those last five stamps to like unlock that final world, but it's just the last five little things that you can get if you choose to.
I will never do that.
Once you unlock the final world, then every level has five boxes under it, and it will show you who you've beaten the level with. So you can see and then you can see like in the, when you go to the menu to check like your green stars, it'll show you there too. So then you can like see what you have left to do with each character.
That's a nice thing.
Exactly. I don't think it's bad. Like if you want to be that completionist, which I've already seen people post on Miiverse with those stamps and it makes me so mad. Stupid little kids with all that time. I want to do it so bad. But yeah, so like, I think there's.
Do it. She can play games, right? She's like almost two.
Yeah, she's ready. Well, my wife and I, so we can get through two people at a time. So it's like. There's a couple levels that, like, I would switch away from Mario, who I normally played as, like, to get maybe a specific green star that you needed, like, with a certain character. So
Toad's so overpowered.
Yeah, so there's not many Mario levels I need to play again, but I didn't play at all as Peach or Toad, so, like, I'd have to play through the entire game again, basically, to get all the stamps. And then all of them is Rosalina, obviously, so... but yeah, so I don't know. I really like it. I love all the post game content. I mean, there's in the end, there's four worlds then of extra levels after you beat the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's awesome. Like I kept on being surprised. I was like, oh, I guess this is it. And then I'd get to the end of it and it would open up an entire new world. I'm like, what?
Right.
Holy shit.
And it gets insanely hard.
Yeah. Although it does get to that point, like a 3D World did where you're like, oh, I've played this level. It's just harder.
Right. They remix it. Yeah. Maybe it's,
which is
maybe
totally fine. I mean, when you get like, I feel like they earned enough goodwill throughout the rest of that game that they can do that at that point.
Yep, I agree. And usually it's the way they change it makes it different enough that it's fine. Yeah. It's not like other 3D games where it's like it's the same level, but now there's like a clone of you chasing after you who will kill you if he touches you kind of thing. You know, usually it's other stuff besides that kind of thing. So, but I love that game. And then so what I've also been playing when not playing that with my wife is... Persona 4.
Oh, on the Vita. I forgot that you were playing that. You played it on PS2, though, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, technically, I played it on my backwards compatible PS3. Yeah, okay. But yeah, I did play the original
you
release.
You backwards compatible PS3. How's your PS4 playing PS3 games, dick?
Is it a straight port?
Yeah, but I mean, with like some extra added content and stuff, and it looks better and is in widescreen, which is nice.
I still own PS2 that game and haven't opened it at all.
It's so good.
It's so daunting.
just start it, and you'll be surprised with how easily it sucks you in.
I have a feeling I'm looking at this whole thing where I might not have a job in January. That seems like the perfect time.
This is the perfect, the perfect time to get into
Zach,
a whole other life.
We'll do the Persona 4. We'll do a Persona 4 endurance run. No one on the internet's
done
that.
Oh, my God.
No.
Do it. But yeah, it's just so fantastic. I played about 60 hours of the original, and then just like stuff came up, and I never finished it. That's not even finishing it.
No, I played a lot of Persona 3, and I never finished that either.
Yeah, I mean Persona 4. I mean, really, you're looking at least like 80 or 90 hours.
Oh my God. I probably failed a paper because of Persona 3. Like there was just like a month where I just played the shit out of that game.
Yeah,
and then I think I got to it. Like I think what it was is that like because I was in college and I got like a grade back. I was like, holy shit! It's like I need to ship up or shape out.
Yeah, so you being jobless will be the perfect time then, as long as it doesn't take away from you like looking for a new job. But besides that, yeah, you'll be set. But yeah, it's just so fantastic. And same as you, I was like, I've already played so much of this game, and I bought it because it was on sale, and I was like, I don't know when I'll actually be willing to, like, make that jump and get back into it. And then as soon as I did, like, I was hooked. I mean, I started it this weekend on Friday. What's today? Thursday. And I've already put about 13 hours in.
Wow.
And I'm just going to keep pushing through it until I beat it. I really want to have completed it. But, I mean, what I love so much about this game, and Persona 3 does it too, but I really feel like 4 kind of refines the whole formula, is it's, like, half hardcore, you know, JRPG where you're going through dungeons and equipping things and leveling up and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like half like dating sim where it's like you're in high school and you have to study for tests and quizzes and you meet people and you kind of choose who you want your friends to be and who you want. You pick your girlfriend and like all this, or boyfriend if you choose. I think you can your guy into dudes. And like, yeah, so it's just like it's this like dichotomy between like when you're in the like demon world, the shadow world, I think is what they really call it, inside the TV where you're fighting and doing all your traditional RPG stuff, and then the real world where you're going to school, yeah, and like maintaining your relationships, and you join a club, so like maybe you join the basketball team, but you also join the drama club, and then practices are on the same day, so you have to decide which practice you want to go to, because each boosts different stats and different relationships
it
and things like
way
that.
More just like. Persona 3 than I guess I thought.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, no problems here. Persona 3 is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, it's the same kind of thing, but it just, it does it all so well. I mean, it's so easy to just get really sucked into, and then you get that thing where you're like, okay, just one more day. Like, I'll play one more day, you know, on the calendar and see what happens. And then, you know, a day, as long as you don't go into dungeons, a day really could last like 5 minutes between all your school activity and your after school activity. And so it's easy to keep getting that thing. You're like, okay, one more. And yeah, it's just awesome. It's such a good game.
Huh.
So Neil, play it come January.
I might even start it sooner. I mean, I guess just a little aside, I've been playing a lot of Soul Sacrifice on Vita, which is really good. It's Monster Hunter-ish, but like more bite-sized. And I mean, that's what's been dominating my Vita time right now after I finished Tearaway, which is also very good.
Yeah, that's what I need to kind of check
out
next,
I think. Both of you guys play Tearaway. You might not like it as much as I did, but like that game just hit me in all the right spots. But it's fantastic.
So Zach, what do you have?
I'll talk about two things. I got SteamWorld Dig on the day of the eShop update.
Yeah, why were you doing that?
Because I wanted to test the shared wallet. So I got a 20. There was that Best Buy sale. You get a $20 gift card for $16.
I might go back again and get more because like it's basically like it's every game next year discount.
Oh God. I wanted to check that shared wallet, so it took forever. But I finally downloaded it, and yes, hey, the shared wallet works. And I've been playing SteamWorld Dig off and on over the last 5 days. It's not great. It's very, like, everybody on Twitter described it as, it's like Metroidvania. And I watched the videos, and they really highlight that. But then when you actually play the game, you're just digging all the time.
Yeah, like, it's I really like the little dungeons in that.
Yeah, the dungeons are what save it. But the rest of the time is just digging to find some jewelry. Dig, find some rocks. Teleport back to the surface. Sell it all. Buy new equipment. Dig. It's just, I'm going to wear out the B button on this, my 3DS. Digging. And at one point, you get a drill. So and you're drilling forever. And, you know, it's a real pretty game, very, very well. The artist style is good. It's kind of charming. Almost reminds me of Rango. I don't know why.
No, I get that. It's also the Western vibe.
Yeah, exactly. But it really doesn't use the 3D at all. Aside from, you know, words look like they're superimposed over everything else. But I'm going to probably beat it, but Lord, it's going to take some effort. But it was cheap. It was like $8, so there's that.
Yeah.
And
I kind of wonder, like, how much of this was the fact that it kind of came out of nowhere and it was a good game.
Yeah.
Kind of makes it get kind of...
nowhere on NWR.
Actually, yeah.
On the video, Neil, on the video preview, we are quoted on their video preview.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I think Don had been in contact with those guys.
Don was all over it, yeah.
And we even did an interview with them a couple months prior. I think Tyler might have led that or something like that. But everything they were saying, right. You're like, wow, this game sounds like it's going to be pretty cool. But because they were unproven, like, I still didn't buy into it until Don was playing it and loved the shit out of it. And I played through it, although I ended up beating it in like 2 days.
Really?
Five or 6 hours into it. It played really, really quickly, and it was okay. But like the whole time I'm playing it, yeah, it was easy to burn through. But I wasn't really that impressed.
It's not a lot there.
Yeah, like it's very repetitive, and I didn't enjoy the grind or the dig, if you will.
Right. Yeah. So I'll keep playing that, but I'm not loving it. And then, but the other eShop game that I got that I've gotten back into after kind of putting it down for a while. Is a game I really do enjoy, and that's Senran Kagura.
And not for the reasons you think. I've been wanting to hear you talk about this.
So it is like, okay, so you got these five girls in a school is the conceit, and they're all shinobi in training. So you pick a girl, you can change at any time, but you pick one of them. I don't even know their names. It's not even important, but you pick one. And you can level them up and level them up their two different attributes, their yin and their yang attributes, and that will boost their abilities, give them different attacks. And so what I've been doing is, I know this sounds boring, but I enjoy it, taking every girl and grinding through the first two levels of missions. Yeah, just to get rid of that. And I only have one girl left to do that on. And, you know, the storyline is that there's this school of evil shinobi, and they even call themselves evil shinobi, and they dress sluttier, and sometimes you have to fight them, and they're kind of like the mini bosses, I guess. But the gameplay itself is like, you'll pick a mission, and you'll fight like 100 dudes. You know, in a span of time, or you have to reach some point, or you have to kill a specific dude eventually to take something from him. But all the missions are basically variations on kill all these dudes. And you'd think that would get really old, but you get new attacks enough that you kind of learn to play with it. Like at level 20, everybody gets the ability to chain attacks forever. And that is insanely fun. And missions go by like that. Like I beat a boss one time in like 13 seconds because I just kept chaining attacks. But before you get that attack, what you're supposed to do is fight, fight, fight. And then you'll knock somebody in the air and you real quick press A and you jump in, follow them and you hit them in the air. And then you press A again when you get the little green ring and you do it again and again. That's how you chain attacks in the beginning. And then everybody has a stat boost, which is called Shinobi Mode, and their stats boost. And then if you want to, you can start each mission without any clothes on except your bikini. So your defense is like nothing.
Yeah, but then like you're super powerful or something?
You're super powerful. And it is a nice trade-off. And you have to balance the two to get fully boosted with both of your stats. So, and there's even, you know, there's a dress up. You can choose your outfit for school and for the beach and for, you know, your shinobi mode. And there are accessories like glasses and an eye patch, and you can have a piece of toast. And I just unlocked a rabbit costume and a bear costume. So it's a very silly, lighthearted game. And it sounds repetitious, and it kind of is, but it's the kind of game you can play while you're marathoning Family Feud.
And why are you marathoning Family Feud? Is this what unemployment
because
has done
Steve
to you?
Harvey Feud is amazing. It is the best thing on television.
I just love that you said that. Like, that's a common thing that many people do. Yeah, you're like, so why would you do that at night? And you're watching a week's worth of Family Feud. This is the perfect game
exactly.
for you.
You can get enough out of both of them just to know what's going on. but I'm going to max out The Last Girl Tonight, and then I'm going to actually continue the story, because you don't have to beat every mission in a level to continue the story. But I really like it. I think the price is maybe a little too high, but you are getting two games, and the localization is shockingly good.
Is this just on eShop? No, it's a
physical
game.
No, it's
just on eShop.
Oh, it is on eShop.
In
That's
Japan,
what, okay.
it was a...
I thought yeah. so.
There's a whole series of games in Japan.
And so how much is it?
$30.
It's not bad.
No, it's no. You're getting yeah. it's true. You're getting two.
It's a yeah. retail game just on the eShop yeah. because it's niche.
Right.
It's like
anything less than 40 at this point for 3DS games to me is like, oh, yeah. that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
unless
still,
it's been
I'll,
out
I'll
for
be,
like 2
I'll
years.
I'll be honest,
but...
speaking of another retail Japan release that just came to the eShop, $30 for Phoenix Wright is making me not get it. I think it was 20. I would have already bought it.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll go get another one of those Best Buy eShop cards and get it for a discount.
You should go get Edge while you're at it.
Well, that's only on Wii U right now.
I know,
right?
It is.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. Shared wallets.
Phenomenal.
Okay, shared wallets, man. I'm on
board. Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
That's another game I've been playing, but I won't talk about it. It's just really fun.
Cool. Is that... And
no,
I
wish
you
now
reviewed,
that...
right?
Uh-huh. I gave it like an 8 or 9.
Are you going to get the new one that came out today?
Rift.
Rush.
Rush. I don't really know what it is.
I mean, well, it's like the Rubik's. It had the Rubik's Cube license when it first came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Rubik's Cube makes my brain hurt.
But I think it's another like cube puzzle game.
Yeah, it is a cube puzzle game. But I'm gonna be in Hawaii for 2 weeks, so I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah, play some Picross.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I would.
That's what I'm gonna. I'm packing it, dude.
Yeah.
It's already packed.
This might be the night I start replaying Picross 3D. We can talk about it on our morning show when we both don't have jobs in January.
Amen.
Look forward to Connectivity Morning where Zach and Neil do live broadcasts
on
Twitch.
This is the kind of thing that like maybe you don't want to hope for, but the more I think about it, knowing Zach's unemployment and my pending unemployment, if in the beginning of January, if we both don't have jobs... I think we should just do a live show every day. Because
that's
the
live
not?
Connectivity that we promised back.
Yeah,
on the
yeah.
Live
it'll
show,
just be
yeah.
depressed Zach and depressed Neil talking about like, did you look for job? Did you go on an interview today? No.
I want the cover art to be like both of you in just like sad. Robes, yeah. like with just like a cup of coffee and like 5 o'clock shadows. And just looking terrible.
The clock says noon or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Well, for me it would be because I don't think you're getting up at like 5 a.m. to record with
no.
me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so if you think that'd be fun, I guess sabotage all of our job interviews.
There you go.
Perfect. You dick.
Zach and Neil in the morning.
Yeah.
I would support this.
Yeah, but maybe that will happen. Who knows? Let's be optimistic and say no, it won't. Might. But.
So I think that's going to do it. Thank you for joining us for depressing sales talk and then a whole lot of games that I guess mostly run Nintendo platforms. So
you know what I forgot
thing.
To mention, Scott? Senran what? Kagura has really big-breasted women. And damn bouncy.
And bouncy. So there you go. God, I wish that could be like on the little eShop like display for it. Yeah, like that could be like, yeah, that would be the poll quote from Nintendo World Report. Damn bouncy. Zach Miller, Nintendo World Report. I'd like that. Might just Photoshop that just for the fun of it.
There you go.
spreading that around. So Zach, Neil, thank you for being here as always. Neil, thanks for coming out of like semi-retirement to join us.
Man, this hibernation happened again.
If you have thoughts about Nintendo's future, be sure to email us connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. I think next week, Alex is actually working on a segment all about the future of the Wii U, or maybe Nintendo specifically. So if you've got kind of thoughts or questions, send them in.
The most depressing segment ever.
Well, especially Alex hosting it, because he's already down on Nintendo in general. So yeah, we'll see what he puts together.
He should get Austin from Nintendo Free Radio.
I was carrying the positive, yeah, right? positive hope for a long time. And I think it was back. What was it, mid-October when they released like their first half of the fiscal year sales? That's when I looked at that and was just like, this shit's fucked. they might rebound and do under GameCube sales after this.
Stop saying that.
But like this isn't going to get much better. Like this is it.
It's like you said, Nintendo's got enough in the coffers that they're going to be fine. This doesn't strike me as the end of like Nintendo or Nintendo in the console market. What it does strike me as is maybe the end of a sooner end to the Wii U than maybe we had.
Shit's gonna go down. I don't know what exactly that will be. It reminds me of last year when Nintendo was talking about how they're going to reveal a new 3D Mario at E3, and people were talking about like, oh, what is it going to be? Is it going to be like Galaxy 3? Or like a new version of whatever, and I'm just like, I just hope it's something that'll blow me away. And at E3, Super Mario 3D World did not blow me away. So that's what I'm going into next year, that Nintendo's going to have to do something to change shit up. And I hope
Nintendo Land
away.
2.
And I'm not really that optimistic Rocky that it's going to blow me away. I think it's going to be really, it's going to be a bummer.
Yep. But yeah, if nothing else within the...
Maybe next week to counterbalance it, we should do something on why the 3DS is so fucking great.
There you go.
Yeah. Just our favorite Nintendo memories from when we were kids and everything was great.
No, because the 3DS still is great.
No, 3DS is fantastic.
The 3DS plays Picross 3D.
Yeah, well, granted, I don't think it's possible for the 3DS to be any better than it is right now, as far as like the year 2013 for the 3DS was incredible. But that just means it's going to be like, 2014 is really good. It's just not as good as like the best year for a system ever.
Yeah. You know what I want more than anything is I want the 3DS's library on the hardware of the Vita.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love playing the Vita. Like, I enjoy the 3DS, but this thing just feels so slick. I've only had it for a few months now, and
touchscreen on the Vita is so good. Like,
it's
so
good, and like just all the, I mean, the how seamlessly it's attached to the PS4 and your friends list, and I know they just did, you know, the Nintendo Network ID, but you still don't even have universal friends list between the two damn things, and I mean, it's just, it's so nice. It really feels like an extension, like, of the PlayStation 4, and it feels like it's part of the same family.
I was super angry that my 2DS couldn't connect to my Nintendo ID.
Oh, yeah, because you've got the two handhelds, just one.
It pissed me off.
Yeah, what do you even have on your 2DS?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I played Zelda on it.
So, yeah. But obviously the 3DS hard library is just fantastic, and it did have a great year, so. That's just something I think about the more and more I play the Vita and just, like, fall in love with all of it.
People are gonna hate us.
What's that?
We're just like, man, we use fucked, and guess what? Vita's better than 3DS.
Yeah, quote me.
You'll be
quote
great me. Playing Nintendo games on my iPhone.
Yeah, Angry Birds Mario is what I'm looking forward to.
All right, yeah, we're done.
I'm done. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Now stay tuned for a bonus segment, Dinosaur Discussion with Zach and Scott.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and I'm joined by Zach Miller.
Hello.
And if I'm joined by Zach Miller, that means more likely than not, it's another installment of Dino Chat.
What? Or crazy sports team names.
Yeah, we spent like the first 20 minutes inventing dinosaur-themed sports names. Which I came up with the Compies being like a really awesome like elementary or middle school football team, like a peewee team. A bunch of little crazy people running around.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to be talking about dinosaurs. I think this is, our third, maybe fourth one done now?
Yeah, third or fourth. Yeah, I think you're right.
That'd be third. We've got a couple questions from some listeners from Twitter and all that. And then we've got some dinosaur news, which, I don't know, is dinosaur news frequent? It seems weird to say dinosaur news.
It comes and goes, yeah. Sometimes, some years, it'll be all over the place, but this year's been fairly quiet.
Yeah. Dinosaur news, and then we've got some dinosaur entertainment also that we're going to talk about for a second. So let's talk about the news first. So it sounds like there was a new species of dinosaur discovered. Is would that be the correct way to say that, Zach?
That's correct. Yes. Okay. It's from Utah. It's called Shiats. I don't know why. I forget the etymology of the name, but it's called Shiats, and it's not a tyrannosaur. Scott, have you ever heard of Allosaurus?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Allosaurus is like a smaller than T-Rex. It's got three fingers on its hand, and it has little horns in front of its eyes. And it was the most common carnivore in North America during the Jurassic period.
Mm-hmm.
Shiats is related to Allosaurus in the same way that a domestic dog would be related to a wolf. They're two different families, really, but they're very closely related. So Shiats is what we call a carcharodontosaur, which means a shark-toothed lizard, because they're huge. Some of the largest carnivorous dinosaurs ever found are carcharodontosaurs, and they mostly lived in South America and Africa, but we've found a few in North America, and Shiats is, I think, the second one that's reasonably well known now.
Okay.
But the problem with Shiats, it's about 30 feet long. It's not an adult yet, so it probably got bigger, and it was eventually replaced by Tyrannosaurus. But I have a problem with Shiats. When it was announced, there were press releases and news stories, and all the press releases and news stories, especially on the internet, had a picture alongside the text, of course, because people want to know what it looks like.
Was it not an actual picture of it?
Well, it was an artist's, picture of what we think it looked like.
Okay.
But the problem is the whole specimen is about 9 vertebrae, some rib fragments, and half of one side of the pelvis.
Well, that's not maybe much to go on.
Not, you can identify it to the family, the Carcharodontosauridae, but maybe not a whole lot after that. And that really angers me whenever, I think it's very irresponsible when you get a very fragmentary fossil, but people want to see what it looks like. And instead of saying, we don't really know yet.
You just make something up.
You just make it up. And those pictures are just begging to be overturned with any new information. I mean, with some vertebra and half a pelvis, really all you're saying is it has a back and legs. so that really rubbed me the wrong way.
Quite the distinction.
Yeah.
And what probably happens is these first images that become popular initially, I think these are probably the things that stay in people's minds.
And yeah,
even if revisions
true.
Come out later, it's kind of like we talked about, like with I think it was raptors in the Jurassic Park films, how their hands shouldn't be like that, kind of like pointed down.
Right.
But that's all we think about because it's like the most popular interpretation of it, even though it's wrong.
Yeah, and there's a lot of resistance to putting feathers on our dinosaurs because people are so used to that scaly Jurassic Park dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
So even when, that's been a theme in paleontology since the beginning, is these artistic memes crop up and they stick around forever. Like it took until I'm not kidding, until the 1990s for people to stop drawing T-Rex like Godzilla. Really embarrassing, but that train of thought just sticks in your mind.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. People are going to, I don't think Shiatz is anywhere near important enough or popular enough to be, you know, like T-Rex.
Right, right.
So nobody's going to care if it's overturned in next year or 5 years from now. But if it was something like a T-Rex, that would really, you know, it can damage the public perception.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also kind of damage the public perception of paleontology as a science, saying, well, how the heck do you know that it looks like this when all we've got are some vertebra? Now, the press releases were pretty careful to walk around that fact. You'd really have to read the paper itself to kind of have it smack you in the face and say, oh, mm-hmm. this is all the material? All right. They didn't really address that in the press releases, but I think you're right. I really do.
Yeah.
So that's Shiatz. It's a new carcharodontosaur. It lived in Utah. We don't have a lot more information than that.
But so it is the biggest like predator?
Oh no, not at all. It's it belongs to based on the estimates, the size estimates based on the bones that were found, that scales up to about a 30-foot long animal. Mm-hmm. So that's about as big as Allosaurus.
Okay.
But carcharodontosaurs in South America and Africa get to be 50 feet long.
Oh, okay.
Or a little bigger. And Shiatz is a subadult, so it could have gotten, I'm not going to say twice as big, but, you know, a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Giganotosaurus and Carcharodontosaurus are both longer than T-Rex.
Oh, okay.
By about maybe 2 meters, 6 feet or so.
Oh, wow.
So not huge, but mm-hmm. noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
But T-Rex could still kill them both very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on to some Twitter questions.
Tweets.
Yeah, some tweets. And I don't have the exact tweet in front of me, but I can summarize it well enough. And kind of tied to this, I think, a little bit. We had, I'm pretty sure it was Pure Evil tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And asked sort of just about, like, I guess kind of just how concrete our knowledge of dinosaurs is. Because he said, like, he feels like since he's been alive, like, what we've known about dinosaurs and believed to be true has, like, kind of fluctuated and changed.
Yeah, it's changed so much. That's very true. Dinosaurs have gone through paleontology has gone through two pretty big revolutions in just the last 30 years or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was, you know, getting the tails off the ground, lowering the heads. These things weren't Godzilla.
Yeah.
Made them faster, meaner, warm-blooded. I mean, that was a huge deal. And then the second revolution is just still happening. It's these putting feathers on them, and
yeah,
and a lot of people are resistant to that, but a lot of people are resistant to warm-bloodedness and fast, speedy dinosaurs in the beginning too.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. The science has changed so much so quickly, and it's a good question. In 20 years, will people look back on today and think, oh, they thought that, that's so quaint. But I take comfort in the fact that science is self-correcting. And we know more about these animals now than we ever have because we have more fossils and because we have more people working on them and re-examining old fossils. And so in 20 years, people might look back at some ideas and say, "These, you know, what did they think back then?" But you also have, in the future, I'm sure they'll understand that, you know, if you take a picture of the state of knowledge in 2013, maybe that's the best we could do,
mm-hmm.
given the knowledge we have at the moment. So I think that is actually one of the frustrating things about science for people,
yeah.
Is that it does self-correct and it is constantly changing, but it's, I believe, and I really do believe that science, good science is always moving forward towards the truth, towards a fact-based reality.
Right.
And I mean, look, in the 1800s, when not the 1800s, in 1901, 1902, when they dug T-Rex out of the ground, nobody had ever seen anything like that. So they just, you know, went with the knowledge they had at the time, which was, this is a big reptile. It must not be fast moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must be cold blooded and sunned itself. And it was a big fat lizard that stood upright. And things changed pretty quickly. Although that took, like I said, that took forever to change.
Right. The characteristics, the non-lizard characteristics, yeah. I guess.
Although with some fossils, like Triceratops has a spectacular fossil record. And people got like that. I mean, they had enough Triceratops fossils right from the get-go to pretty well reconstruct Triceratops accurately. And it's been being drawn accurately for about 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny to kind of draw back to the space bonus segment we do too. But for as like up in arms as people are about Pluto not being a planet anymore, like... To me, that's like kind of like the one only like thing that's changed, at least to me in like the public realm of knowledge. To me, yeah. That's the only thing I really know that has like changed since I was a kid. So if people were like as aware or as in tune with like dinosaurs as they are with planets and stuff, I feel like, yeah, there'd be a lot of outrage about all these things you're talking about, like the feathers and yeah.
More Brontosaurus.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
yeah, that's like, there's dinosaurs, Plutos.
Yeah, Pluto's not a planet, and now we have a whole bunch of other things that are like Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
So we have like half a dozen, what do you call them, near planets or something.
Yeah.
Whatever term they use to describe Pluto now.
Johnny, if you're listening, tweet us right now and tell
Please
us what
do.
The correct
yes,
term
God,
is.
Yes, God, yes.
Yeah.
I think there are some astronomical bodies... near planets or whatever you want to call them that are larger than Pluto.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And that's nuts to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another thing that 100 years ago, nobody had any idea. You couldn't see those things. You couldn't measure them. So the state of even astronomy changes radically
from
1 year to the next, maybe.
Right. And to your point, I mean, that doesn't discredit it. That just, anything, shines a spotlight on the fact that it is evolving. And as we, like you said, gain more knowledge and especially technology, you know, we gain the ability to better analyze and understand these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I just gave a lecture in my wife's English class a few weeks ago about this very topic, about science changing. And yeah, it was a good talk.
Did you see that? You must have, because I mean, it was on Twitter, but that quiz that Grant tweeted you?
Oh, my God.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we get into that here, but if you're on Twitter, find our friend Grant. I think I retweeted it. You can probably find it in my tweet somewhere, but a great creationist like quiz about the dinosaurs. And
yeah.
It was very humorous.
Mm-hmm.
Kid
got 100%, though, so he's been studying.
That's probably like the most upsetting part about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So sad. So let's move on to our next round of questions. And I don't really, I didn't see these questions, so you'll have to kind of fill me in here. But this came from our friend Travis Brody.
Travis Brody, good buddy of the show. See, he said, well, the first thing he says is, horned dinosaurs, are any mutants, juveniles, are adults, different species? What's the deal? So, oh man, he touches on some wonderful topics there. Horned dinosaurs, like Triceratops, looked different when they were little, as you might expect. And 100 years ago, they would have given the babies a different species name.
Oh, sure.
Because they had no idea that it was a baby Triceratops. I mean, you think somebody would have thought, well, maybe this is a baby.
Maybe this little one.
Little, it's got really big eyes, you know. And,
yeah.
But 100 years ago, they in fact, there is record of a species called Brachyceratops, which is clearly a juvenile. And in fact, the people who originally described it knew it was a juvenile. But they had no idea what the adult looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been an already described animal.
Yeah.
But anyway, there are plenty of records of juveniles being named and then later being found out to be adults. This happens all the time in duckbills, actually. Duckbill dinosaurs, there's like a million of them. I can't keep them straight, and besides, they're really boring. But there's a whole lot of sunken species that were clearly now we know clearly juveniles of other duckbills. And it's true in horned dinosaurs too. You have Brachyceratops, Avaceratops are both juvenile animals of something else. Now we can make pretty educated guesses about what they are. Like Brachyceratops is probably a Rubosaurus. But we don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're just found in the same place. And Avaceratops might be a juvenile Albertoceratops, but who really knows?
Right.
So there's not as much of that anymore. Nowadays, paleontologists have realized that maybe juveniles shouldn't be named.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see that anymore. But yeah, for a while there, man, it was crazy. I mean, there were at one point 15 species of Triceratops.
Just because they were like from different, like,
different
like
age
points
groups.
In the lifespan. Yeah.
Yeah. Different age groups, just individual variations. Sometimes the description would be like, this species of Triceratops differs from this other species of Triceratops by how large the little triangles around its frill were. And you think, oh, that could be it could be individual variation.
Right.
You know, I don't look exactly like you.
No.
But we're both the same species.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, and that's another thing we're finding with horned dinosaurs. There is a fair amount of individual variation, which kind of makes, you know, when is it a new species and when is it just kind of a weirdo?
Right.
Of an established species.
And how can you tell, yeah.
And how can
I guess if you find two that have the same, like, defining characteristics, then maybe that's when you start to think they're a separate species.
Yeah, exactly.
When you find matches. But yeah, if you don't find that match, then yeah, how do you know?
Yeah, I just today read a paper about trying to figure out if one called Ankyceratops is it's very close to Triceratops. Ankyceratops, is it two species, which was originally proposed when they were found? Or is it one with a lot of individual variation? And this guy did a ton of measurements on the known skulls, and he plotted them on a graph in a computer and came up with different, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what you call it. But they all clustered together. So he said, well, none of them are really far apart from each other. They're probably all the same species. But it did show that they differ individually. As for mutants, you can't really tell without a good sample size.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably tell a mutant Triceratops because there are hundreds of Triceratops skulls.
Mm-hmm.
It is stupidly common. In fact, I think there's one formation in Montana where that's the only dinosaur around.
Really?
Yeah. It's either Montana or Alberta.
Or it's like that's all that they could find were just Triceratops?
The only dinosaur they've got in whatever formation that was like Triceratops heaven.
That's crazy. It's like a huge herd of Triceratops or something.
I know. And you know, you think like one in a million animals fossilizes.
Yeah.
So,
you know what I'm saying? That's true, too. Yeah, so you've got that many in good condition. How many were there that didn't survive?
So in Triceratops, there are actually a few candidates for really weird mutants or sick individuals. There's a dinosaur called Nedoceratops that basically looks like Triceratops, except it doesn't have a nose horn.
Mm.
And it has a really weird looking hole in the side of its frill. That might be an injury.
Yeah.
And then there's another kind called Ojoceratops, which is basically Triceratops with a more rounded frill. And then there's a potential dwarf called Tatankaceratops, which looks exactly like a tiny little Triceratops. I mean, it looks like an adult Triceratops, but five Trunk. Feet long.
That's awesome. So like a miniature. That would have been some rich, I'm going to say caveman. I know there weren't cavemen, but some rich caveman's like pet.
Yeah, exactly.
Pet miniature Triceratops that he had groomed and carried around in a purse. That's amazing.
But yeah, that's those animals are potentially mutants or sick individuals, or dwarfism, which would be spectacular in a dinosaur. How weird would that be?
Yeah.
But we only know that because we have so many Triceratops skulls that the weirdos really jump out.
Right.
Whereas if you have like 10 skulls of Ankyceratops, well, is that guy a weird looking guy or is he just a variation?
Right.
So you need a good sample size. And the one more thing I'll say about this, I think I've told people about it already, is that there's a theory being kicked around that Triceratops is not an adult yet. The full the classic Triceratops that we imagine is the subadult of another dinosaur called Torosaurus. And Torosaurus looks just like Triceratops, but it has a really huge, long frill. It has an 8-foot skull when you include the frill. So these paleontologists, Horner and Scanlon, said, well, what if Triceratops keeps on growing and becomes Torosaurus? And there are so many problems with that theory that are I'm loving it because scientists are testing the theory and they're finding it doesn't really measure up in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But that's another question about growth. Could one species, even though it looks like an adult, keep on growing?
Well, yeah, with as big as these things get, yeah, like who's to say when they've gotten as big as they can get?
Yeah, when do they stop?
Yeah.
Or maybe the Torosaurus is like a silverback Triceratops, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or a lion with a mane. It just gets a really huge frill.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, it's a really interesting research topic that's going on right now.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then he had one more question.
Yeah, he just said, how awesome are ankylosaurs?
Oh, how awesome are they?
The more I read about them, the more awesome they are. You know ankylosaurs, right? The big armored guys with the clubs on their tail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember those from when I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been, I don't know why, but I've been reading a lot about them lately. And you've probably never seen this. A lot of people probably haven't, but you usually see an ankylosaur from the side, you know, in pictures. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at that sucker from the top, it looks like a turtle. It's so wide.
Yeah.
And the tail is, you know, skinny and the head's popping out the other end. Mm-hmm. And it just looks absolutely ridiculous. And it's so wide, in fact, I just found this out. You know how if you look at if you look at an animal walking from above, its legs go up and down like 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, right? If it's walking forward?
Sure, yeah.
Well, it turns out that in ankylosaurs, the leg socket is at a diagonal.
Mm-hmm.
So that the back leg swings from about 2 o'clock to
like
7
or
o'clock.
Or yeah. 7, yeah.
Yeah. So its leg anatomy actually changed because it's so wide. It had to be able to get past its giant belly.
Sure.
Just ridiculous animals. And they've got that club on their tail and all the armor, and they're really fascinating, and I'm enjoying reading more about them. I always kind of wrote them off.
And now is that something that's established, all that armor and stuff? That's not an interpretation by an artist like we've already talked about? I mean, there's evidence of that.
Oh yeah, the armor's, in fact, a lot of times you'll find a very partial skeleton but a lot of armor.
Okay. Which makes sense that would survive.
Heavy.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the exact placement of the spikes and the scutes and stuff is interpretation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There are very few cases, but there are some cases, very few cases where the armor is preserved as it was.
Yeah.
You know, on the animal.
Sure.
In fact, I can only think of two, Tarkia in Mongolia, I think, and certainly Euoplacephalus in North America. But very rare that you find the the armor, as they say, in situ.
And then is there enough evidence to suggest that they did use those tails as like weapons or as defense? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's, so the base of the tail on an ankylosaur is the only flexible part of the tail. It's, and the rest of the tail is very interconnected, fused tail vertebra.
Yeah.
And then you've got this huge ass club at the end.
Yeah.
So it was like swinging a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous T-Rex skeleton named Sue that's in Chicago. The Chicago Field Museum, and she has a shattered tibia. And it's at just the right height for an ankylosaur club.
Oh, okay. So they think that's what would have caused it?
Yeah. And in fact, ankylosaurs have the exact same club anatomy as a group of mammals, much later on, of course, called glyptodonts. They're those really big armadillos that you see in kids' books. They have this huge covering, this dome-like covering of armor, and mm-hmm. then they have a huge tail with the same kind of club anatomy with a club at the end. And in some of the glyptodonts, there are giant fucking spikes coming out of the club. It's like a mace. So yeah, these animals didn't develop those clubs for fun.
Yeah.
And they might have used them against each other, actually.
Sure.
But it's one way to shatter a T-Rex's leg.
I guess so, yeah. I've seen that. I've seen Sue, obviously, at the... It's the Field Museum,
right?
Field
Museum. Isn't she gorgeous?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been many field trips there as a kid, and then as an adult, I've been there a few times, so... Yeah.
I think she's still the most complete T-Rex on record.
Oh, really?
To this day, I believe that's true. I think they found over 90% of her skeleton, which is phenomenal for any dinosaur.
And then outside the Field Museum, they have another...
they have that big Brachiosaur.
Yeah, the Brachiosaur, yeah. Which, when the Blackhawks were in the playoffs, they put a big Blackhawks jersey on it.
Oh, really?
I sent you pictures of that, I'm pretty sure.
I think I did see that.
Yeah, they put a big Blackhawks jersey on it, yeah. Pretty great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Sue is pretty wonderful. She's a good
skeleton. So to kind of close out, we'll end on something a little light here, because I just saw a trailer for it like literally 5 minutes before we recorded and I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah.
But my favorite two JLs are uniting in a movie, John Leguizamo and Justin Long. In a dinosaur movie. What is it, Walking with Dinosaurs?
Walking with Dinosaurs 3D.
A Disney animated film. Well, not computer animated.
Computer animated. Is it Disney?
I thought it was Disney.
I have no idea.
Let me look it up. But yeah, okay. I mean, anytime there's a dinosaur movie announced, you kind of like, you pay attention to it?
I've known about it for a really long time. In fact, they did all the photography in Alaska.
Oh, okay.
Because it's about Alaskan dinosaurs. So do you remember, I don't know if you remember it, it was so long ago, the old Walking with Dinosaurs special?
Yeah.
So this is, I don't even know why they're... using that name again, because the old special was kind of like a nature program. There'd be narration, but it would be like, you know, now the T-Rex chases down the Triceratops and eats it. But in this movie, there's the characters talk.
Mm-hmm.
They don't obviously move their mouths, but it's like you can hear what they're thinking.
Right.
And from the trailers, it sounds like they're saying really goofy things. Like, this is obviously a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it because the dinosaurs look so good.
Yeah.
And it's all Alaska dinosaurs. There's the main stars are big horned dinosaurs called Pachyrhinosaurus. We have a new species up here called Pachyrhinosaurus paratorum that differs from the two species in Canada. And there's a big carnivorous dinosaur called Gorgosaurus, who we actually have no evidence of up here except a few teeth. So it could be any Tyrannosaur, really. But they went with Gorgosaurus. and then there's those big pterosaurs, those Darkid pterosaurs, which we have up here. And there's a little bird. I believe the bird has been found, too, but not much of it.
Yeah.
Just enough to say we had a bird up here. And then they have little raptors called Troodon running around with feathers. With feathers, thank God. And, I mean, it looks, it opens on the 20th. I have a movie poster for it.
Oh, do you?
I do. My boss gave it to me. He knew I was a big fan. I'm going to have to watch it in Hawaii, but.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be a nice little treat for you while you're there then.
Yeah. Air conditioned theater.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. A little break from the sun.
But it should be really fun. And a lot of paleontologists who I know and artists, paleo artists who I know worked on the film and consulted on the animals. So I,
oh, awesome.
Aside from the script, which might be a little groan inducing.
Yeah.
It looks like they're really shooting for accuracy.
Yeah, some realism here. Yeah, I'm looking at the trailer now, and yeah, the dinosaurs do look cool. I mean, yeah, they're a much improvement from the Jurassic Park dinosaurs, I would say. Yeah, it looks to me much more sort of realistic, I guess.
Yeah, even the little baby pachyrhinosaurs are based on fossils of baby pachyrhinosaurs.
Yeah.
So that was exciting to me.
Yeah. And, yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll be seeing it opening day.
Yeah, no, not Disney. It's being released by Fox. So I don't know studio did like all the animation and stuff then.
Yeah, I'm not sure who.
I thought it was either DreamWorks or Disney. So if it's not them, then I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, looks pretty neat.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I think that will about wrap up another successful Dino Chat, I would say.
Indeed, indeed.
If you out there, the listener, have any dinosaur-related questions that you'd like to ask Zach, you can email them to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can even just tweet myself or Zach. Zach, you're what, Z Miller?
1902, the year T-Rex was found.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a nice touch. I always kind of wondered what the 1902 was. There you go. Makes sense. And then I'm OK Soda. So you can follow us on Twitter, ask some questions there, email us, whatever you want to do. But hopefully you enjoy this.
Yeah.
Zach, thanks for being here.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm sure this is a chore for you to talk about this thing you absolutely love.
Oh, I know, man, oh man.
And we will talk to you guys later.
See y'all later.
Bye.